Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. NFL Week 8. Oh, how the time flies when you're having fun around these parts. I am your fearless leader, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only Payne Insider. What's going on this morning, my good man?
Not too much. I'm debating what my drink of choice might be this evening as I watch my Dolphins probably get beat up.
I was going to say, are you going to go to an adult beverage? I mean, you told us on the last podcast that you've only drank like twice since the start of football season, or maybe calendar year 2018. I wasn't sure if you were going to go down, you know, that deep, dark hallway.
Yeah, I got my balls busted a little bit for not being a man online. So I may have to make a drink this evening, and certainly the Dolphins could be a good excuse to do so.
I was going to say, you know, getting bashed online always, you know, can take a toll on one's self-esteem when some strangers come after you. So,
not really.
I didn't think so. I wasn't
care,
too worried.
Care factor minimal.
Yeah, I wasn't too worried about your state of mind. Before we get into some of the games, and of course we have our weekly chat with Dave Mason, which should be oh so much fun, given how the weekend went for the house. Wanted to get your quick take on what we saw unfold Monday night with the New York Giants sneaking in the back door as 4.5 point underdogs against the Falcons, and then of course the corresponding moves as the Giants have traded away two key contributors on the defensive side.
Two bad teams with lots of issues. I thought the game kind of played out how it was going to. I you know, certainly a backdoor cover, but I didn't really think it was undeserved. I thought the Giants showed a lot of fight early on in that game, especially defensively in the first half. I mean, you look at the touchdown they gave up, it's two plays. That's it. B.W. Webb's covering Hooper like a blanket, and it's just a perfect pass. And then I believe Marvin Hall burns your number one corner for a touchdown. So aside from that, I didn't really see Atlanta having this massive edge in the first half. Eli misses a wide open OBJ in the corner there going in before half. So I thought the New York Giants held themselves pretty well here. They actually outgained the Falcons. So even though it took a backdoor cover, I didn't think it was overly lucky. Certainly in the second half, Atlanta made some better adjustments, had the fumble there by Julio, which distorted some things. But this is now a full-blown fire sale. I know the Giants are going to also try to move Janoris Jenkins. Not sure if you can move him with that contract. I think it does help, though. It looks like Patrick Peterson is now off the trade block, so that could be a benefit there. But you start to have some questions. I thought Kyle Uletta, we might see him. This could be the last game we see Eli in a Giants uniform, I would think. If it goes poorly, maybe it's Kyle Uletta time. The other question is, what are you going to do with Saquon Barkley? I think if you're that Giants organization, you know he's such a prized possession. He's a running back. I wouldn't really have him taking unnecessary hits this season if the year is already over. That's just my thought process when I'm paying a running back that much. I would certainly envision game plans, or I would hope the Giants organization is smart enough to have game plans where he's maybe only touching it 12, 15 times. I know fantasy owners and the team and the fans may hate that, but you've spent a lot of money on a running back. You certainly don't want him injured going into next season.
Oh, I'm 100% with you. I mean, they have to try and shift their focus towards next year, and the last thing you want is Saquon Barkley taking unnecessary hits if he's continuing to touch the ball 22 to 25 times a game in meaningless football contests down the stretch. You mentioned the quarterback situation. It almost appears to be an arms race now for who's going to end up with the number one overall pick. And did want to get your thoughts real quick on the Raiders as well, Payne. I mean, there's that school of thought that, oh, the Dallas Cowboys, they're all in going out to get Amari Cooper. I think you and I share a brain here going, I don't know in what planet Amari Cooper is this game changer everyone thinks he's going to be. But the Raiders trade one of their second faces of the franchise, so to speak, in the last 8 to 10 weeks. You know, the Raiders just in a race for the number one pick alongside the Giants at this juncture?
Potentially. I mean, it's a weird team right now. I thought this was the move John Gruden would have employed at the start of his tenure, right? You sign this 10-year deal. It's massive. They're going to give you a long leash. There was no reason to take the approach he took in the offseason with just bringing in a bunch of veterans. Like, he thought his team had a chance to compete. It didn't make sense to me. If you thought Derek Carr was your quarterback, you're going to get pieces around him. Now, listen, I know the Mac move was much criticized. To me, certainly, it's you're not trying to get rid of players like that, and John Gruden doesn't help himself when he's, you know, following up that move in a press conference saying, yeah, you know, we'd love to get our hands on a pass rusher. It's a premium position. Like, that's just stupid. But there is a school of thought to me that says, listen, am I comfortable paying a pass rusher $140 million? You know, not really. Am I, you know, I would jump at the chance to move Amari Cooper for a first round draft pick. So I don't really fault him for those two moves. It's not a good team right now. You got to figure out what you have in Derek Carr. Certainly three first round draft picks in 2019 is going to be beneficial. I would think it's just a full blown fire sale. There's a lot of old guys on that roster that you could probably move to contenders, I would think. So I would certainly void myself of a lot of players in that roster. And then I think the big question mark is Derek Carr. I know we talked about this a little bit, and you know, I didn't really want to call him out for crying. And I know Dr. Chow said, hey, it's somewhat of a normal thing when players go through injury that they could potentially cry. Reports coming out this week, locker room fractured. Don't know if Derek Carr's tough enough. Don't know if he's mentally tough enough. Don't know if he's the guy. The locker room's fractured on him after he got caught crying. So I don't know what's going on there. Certainly, we've seen the market take shape. Colts open pick 'em now out to 3. I think some of that has to do with Indianapolis being significantly better than their metrics indicate, but it also has a lot to do with the abortion that is the Oakland Raiders right now.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Oakland, I mean, this is a quarterback in Derek Carr who dealt with some issues, given some of the racial turmoil as well, with the offensive line supposedly wasn't blocking for him because they didn't think he had their back. So clearly, this is a face of the franchise, or at least was supposed to be, that may not ultimately play out that way. Very curious to see what direction the Raiders elect to go in. But enough about four teams that won't potentially make the playoffs, although I shouldn't slight the Redskins too much. We're not going to get to the Redskins-Giants game. But let's get into the games this weekend, Payne. And, of course, we have a little bit of breakfast football. I wasn't sure what you're going.
I got dogs snoring in the background. It's quite funny. And the mic is picking it up. I'm watching the levels, and the mic is just picking up the dog snoring.
I just figured people were going to think when I was talking that you were snoring as I put everybody to sleep around here. But it's good to know it's the dogs that are actually picking up the burden, and it's not you who's expected to provide the analysis that I'm incapable of offering up here for breakfast football. So it's the Jaguars and the Philadelphia Eagles, 9:30 in the morning from lovely London, England. You're looking at the Eagles right now, a 3-point favorite at betonline.ag, trending towards 3.5. The total in this game sits in the low 40s. Let's call it 42 at this point. And I have to ask you, anytime we talk about these London trips and the travel, you mentioned the data that's out there. The Jaguars make this trip annually. Does it still offer the same advantage in 2018 than it did when they started making this annual pilgrimage across the pond?
I think that's an angle certainly some are playing up. I know this did get out to 3.5 before sharp money came in on Jacksonville. I don't know where this ultimately settles. I know Philadelphia's going to be one of the larger public sides in the standalone slot. It is the Eagles' first trip across the pond. This is Jacksonville's sixth time. They're familiar with it. They've won the last three. So I think familiarity is going to provide somewhat of an edge. But you made a good point. It's 2018. Like, all the studies are out there now. All the teams have done the homework on the perfect time to leave home and arrive in London. So this isn't a situation where 2014, you have teams leaving at completely opposite times. That was one thing, like, that was real. You would have to research this. One team's leaving this time. This team's leaving another time. Although John Gruden decided to not follow any of the
analytics. Be just, damned if you're, yeah, the Oakland Raiders.
He seems to be the only guy not following what teams are doing. With them both being on the East Coast, I'm hearing they're doing the normal travel for East Coast teams, which is overnight on Thursday, arrive Friday morning and try to practice. Usually these teams are throughout the course of the beginning of the week getting their schedules readjusted at home, going to sleep at different times, practicing at different times. So when they get on that flight overnight Thursday, they're sleeping, and then they wake up and practice Friday morning. So that seems to be the case for both these teams.
I mean, I can't take credit for that. You brought it to my attention and didn't realize it was a massive thing. So I know when we discussed this game, that was an angle you said, hey, I don't think there's quite the same edge. So I can't take credit for regurgitating some of the information you shared earlier this week. When I look at the Jaguars, though, Payne, Defensively, this team, nearly as stout as they were last season. I mean, second in the league allowing 4.8 yards per play. Second in the league in total defense allowing just more than 300 yards a game. Second in the league opponents' first downs per game at 17.5. Third allowing less than 2 touchdowns a game. However, in this day and age, we talk about big plays and explosive potential. For a defense to be elite, they have to take away the football. And Jacksonville right now, 31st in takeaways per game. And when you have an offense that's really struggling, is the Jaguars defense doing enough to give this team a chance to win?
I think so. When I looked at the 3-game stretch for Jacksonville, the defense hasn't been its normal dominant self, but still been pretty good. 10th in yards per play allowed, top 10 in both rushing and passing success rate defense. So I think Philly's going to have its work cut out for it here. I mean, this is still a one-dimensional offense for Philly right now. But Jacksonville's defense, again, hasn't been dominant the last 3 games during this losing streak, but they've still been very good. I think the one thing that's somewhat concerning here is, you know, Jacksonville's mindset. The players got in, like, this serious verbal altercation that almost led to, like, a melee in the locker room after the Texans game finished. And I'm going to put this nicely. It was basically sparked by defense looking for help and answers from its offense. So now you're hopping on this 10-hour flight across the pond together. You'd hope that there's been peace made, because that could be a weird flight. When you kind of look at how it might project here, maybe a little bit better. Like, the offense for Philly, it's all on Wentz's shoulders at this point. The ground game's been non-existent. 3 yards per rush attempt combined the last 2 games against New York and Carolina. Those are middling run-stopping units. To me, when I look at Philly's offense, you look at the metrics, you look at the all-22, a combination of not having great running backs. They actually do miss Jay Ajayi, as weird as that sounds. The offensive line hasn't been as good, too. We've seen Jason Peters go in and out of the lineup throughout the course of multiple games now. It's just kind of like he's trying to gut it out. He'll sit out a series here and there, then come back. It's clear Peterson and that offense doesn't really believe in the ground game, because you look last week, they play Carolina. Eagles led for 59 minutes in that game, led by more than a touchdown for 32 minutes. Wentz chucks it 37 times. Maybe the area here that you're going to attack is with Zach Ertz. I know that's been Wentz's security blanket. He's having a monster season. He's impossible to cover. Maybe there's some success over the middle of the field. That's where Jacksonville does struggle a little bit. They do a fantastic job on tight ends, but you're looking at that short intermediate part of the field defensively, and Jacksonville allows a 98 passer rating there. They've allowed 4 touchdowns in that area as well, so maybe Ertz finds some success there.
On the other side of the ball, we know that Philadelphia's weakness has been defending the pass. Jacksonville has really struggled. Blake Bortles, 8 turnovers and only 2 touchdowns over the last 3 weeks, ultimately leading to him getting benched for the second half against the Houston Texans. Do we think the Jaguars can move the football well enough through the air to try and put pressure on the Eagles' defense? Now, I know the Jags will have Carlos Hyde in the mix, so hopefully it gives them a little bit of a power back to try and take away some of the burden on Bortles' shoulders. But this is an offense right now that hasn't scored a single point for 3 straight games in the first half of a football game for the first time in franchise history.
Yeah, here's the side of the ball I'm having trouble with. We know how to attack the Eagles' defense. That's through the air, as you've mentioned. It's not a great secondary to begin with. Now it's beaten and battered with injuries. I mean, you look last week, Dexter McDougal played in the slot last week for 81% of Philly's defensive snaps. Todd, he was unemployed at the start of the week. And you know, Norv couldn't spot that area. Maybe Nathaniel Hackett can. The thing is, even if Hackett like identifies what to do, which we all know is pass, can Blake Bortles and a really shoddy receiving core at this group go out and consistently execute it? Like, I have my doubts with that. And this isn't all on Bortles, I don't think, right? Like, the identity of the Jags team is run first, play defense, and right now we're witnessing what an offense looks like and a team looks like without an identity, and it's ugly. I don't think Carlos Hyde is going to come in and just be the savior. He wasn't very good in Cleveland. The Jags offensive line has been downright horrific in run blocking, pass blocking. Bortles been the 7th most pressured quarterback on dropbacks. He hasn't even played every down, so that number is pretty staggering as well. The Jags right now are trotting out a 3rd string left tackle in Josh Walker. He's an undrafted journeyman. I can't see a situation here where the Eagles defensive line isn't creating some kind of pressure and havoc here, even with Derek Barnett out for the season now.
Yeah, I mean, I've been as critical of Blake Bortles as absolutely anybody, but you're exactly right. He doesn't bear the entire burden for what this offense looks like. The offensive line, as you mentioned, been a nightmare. And when you can't run the football, it puts an undue amount of pressure on a quarterback not built to sling it around the yard 40 to 50 times and have success with the receiving core they have there. So interesting game to wake up to on Sunday morning. I have to imagine when the schedule makers put this together, they would be hoping these two teams were leading, you know, carrying the torch for their respective conferences. But as we typically see in London, you don't get teams with winning records going head-to-head. Going into the bulk of the Sunday schedule, and we can start with a team coming in off a bye against a resurgent Detroit Lions side. The Lions, a 3-point favorite at betonline.ag right now, paying total in this game 49.5. The Lions go out and they, of course, acquire Snacks Harrison to try and aid their ailing run defense. It's allowing 140 yards per game and 5.3 yards per carry. But I think the breath of fresh air for the Lions has been their ability to run the football, Kerryon Johnson giving them the guy out of the backfield that they've so desperately craved for the last handful of seasons.
Yeah, when you look at the Lions' offense, man, they've, and you can go back, listen to the preview podcast. That was going to be one of the most improved units in the entire NFL. They invested a lot of money, a lot of draft picks in that offensive line. It looks like it's paid off. That O-line's vastly improved. They're now healthy, too. Kerryon Johnson appears to be the real deal. He has speed. I know he's tracked this past week as having one of the fastest runs in the NFL this season against the Dolphins when he darted down the sidelines for like 71 yards. He was tracked. He was just flying. He's been breaking tackles. The offense is certainly a little more conservative. It's not that chuck and duck offense, but you can get Matthew Stafford, who I think is a good play action quarterback, to find some areas down the field with this much improved running offense. When I look at Seattle defensively, somewhat improved. It's still a below average unit. Hopefully, you know, some guys healthier on that side of the ball will provide some resistance this week, I would think. One of the toughest games for me. It really is, because I think the Lions are trending nicely. Now, I don't know if this is quite the spot, but I think this is a Detroit team that we're going to be able to find some value on towards the later part of the season. I really like what I'm seeing from them. Now, defensively, you know, they've been a little bit of a mess.
When you look at that, I mean, that the Lions defense, and you try and figure out how Seattle is going to be able to attack, and we've seen the Seahawks with a renewed commitment to the ground game so far this season. I mean, four straight games, 113-plus rushing yards as a team, second in the league behind the Rams in rushing attempts per game. And with Chris Carson, you at least see Pete Carroll going, all right, we're going to run the football. Even if we're not successful, he's going to get touches. Do you think that pays dividends against a Lions run defense that we know is a little bit susceptible, even with some of the new additions?
Yeah, that was a great call there. You talked about some of those deficiencies for the Lions defense, specifically in the run game, and you're spot on. Seattle is very run-heavy right now, like we expected. Under Schottenheimer, they actually only pass it 50% of the time. That's the least amount in the NFL. They have trended nicely the last three games over that stretch. 50% of runs have graded successful, and that's exactly where you want to attack this Lions defense. They have issues stopping the run. They do have issues stopping the pass too, but it's no coincidence the Lions go out and get Snacks Harrison from the Giants to kind of shore up that part of their defense, not just for the season stretch, the season long stretch, but to negate this specific opponent here in Seattle. I do like the idea of Russell Wilson having that bye week. He was dealing with a little hamstring issue, so I think him being healthier is nice. Sometimes with the new CBA, offenses show a little bit of rust with the bye week. It hasn't necessarily been a positive, but I think if you have a quarterback that has a lingering issue, that bye week comes at the right time. Frankly, I think he might need to use his legs a little bit more in this game because despite their improvement, Seattle's offensive line still isn't great in pass protection. And now you're going against a Lions defense that number one in adjusted sack rate, number one in sack per dropback. So I think a healthy Russell Wilson here with a full range of mobility helps. And then obviously you have the angle here with Paul Allen. He was a beloved guy with this Seattle team. He was obviously the owner. There's now talks of what's going to transpire with this franchise and where it potentially could head. But this is the Paul Allen game. This is a game where I would expect Seattle. I know it's, you know, that classic 1 o'clock start in the East Coast. I think we see a focused Seattle team here. They've talked about winning this for Paul Allen. He was just very beloved. The players loved him very much. So I think we see a full effort here from Seattle.
Last thing on this game, Payne, we've seen this number kind of ping pong all over the place. A lot of shops opening under the key number of 3 at 2.5, number getting out to 3, even juiced. And early this morning, we saw what appeared to be a wave of Seahawks money coming into the market, taking it down to a soft 3. Any ideas or speculation where this number might ultimately close?
It's always fun to see the pattern of these moves. So 3 is certainly a key number in the NFL. Earlier in the week, doesn't cost too much to get to 3. Thursday, limits start to rise, and we're seeing Seattle now take some money. So I would be in agreement with that trend in the way the money's moving a little bit.
Hard to argue that. You're exactly right. I mean, talking about, and for a lot of our listeners that aren't as familiar with how the betting markets work, you could typically get down fewer dollars in the openers on Sunday and Monday, and then as things open up, that's where you see some of the professional bettors ultimately start to tip their hands. So I'm curious to see if this number continues to trend in that general direction.
What do the bet splits look like? I don't really look at that.
You know what? I'm curious to get Dave's take on the game. Okay. I'll see if it's one of the ones he mentions. But from the books that I've spoken to earlier, it looked to be about a 50-50 split. No real strong stance coming from the general public. This idea that Detroit is still down with Seattle coming in off the bye. For whatever reason, the bye appears to really still move the needle despite some mixed results from a lot of these teams thus far.
That's interesting. And it's again, a tough game because I think Detroit's might not necessarily be here, but I think they are going to trend up here a little bit moving forward.
And you talk about trending up this next game. Maybe you have two teams that it's an optimal spot to try and buy low with the Baltimore Ravens and the Carolina Panthers. Baltimore actually opened as a modest 1-point underdog for their trip to Charlotte. They now find themselves as a 2-point favorite against the Carolina Panthers at betonline.ag. Total in this game right now, Payne, sits at 44. And when I look at this game, I mean, you hit the nail on the head talking about the way to attack Carolina is throwing the football. Baltimore, you have to think, is smart enough to know, hey, we have three receivers. We have a guy in John Brown that can take the lid off of defense. We're going to go after Carolina, and we're going to put the secondary on skates.
I would agree. And to me, you know, this is a matchup of the league's most underrated offense against one of the league's most overrated defenses. I've been kind of hammering this now for a little bit. Ravens now have improved. They're 12th in overall offensive efficiency. And when you look at that Panthers defense, they don't get after quarterbacks, 23rd in pass rush. We know Baltimore's O-line. They know who's back there. They've been Fort Knox. Flacco is one of the least pressured quarterbacks in the league. You look at the Panthers secondary. It's downright abysmal. Wentz goes out, completes 30 of 37 passes last week. They were one-dimensional. That just kind of paints that picture. You look at Carolina, who they've faced. It's been a below-average schedule of passing offenses. Yet they're 25th in passing success rate defense. They've allowed 11% of passes to great explosive. That's 28th in the NFL. I could certainly see John Brown making a few plays in this game. And just, you know, when you simply look at like net yards per play adjusted for opponent, Baltimore, positive 0.6 yards per play. That's fifth best in the NFL. Carolina, negative 0.2 yards per play. And so when you really start to look at who Carolina's played, specifically at home, It's worrisome. It's not good. Cowboys, losing record. Haven't won on the highway all season. Giants, one win all season. And Carolina gets outgained by 2.8 yards per play at home to the Giants, who are currently, you know, in roster blow-up mode. Bengals, not looking so hot. Vastly overrated. It took being a +4 in turnover differential to win that game. So this just, it feels like a good spot. Feels like a good price. I like some of the on-field matchups here for Baltimore.
When we look at the other side of the ball, the Ravens defense, of course, will have their hands full with the Carolina Panthers ground game. The Ravens, though, top 10 in the league, holding opponents to a little more than 90 yards per game, but averaging under 4 yards per carry. When we look at the way Carolina moved the football so effectively in the fourth quarter in comeback mode, scoring 3 straight touchdown drives, basically 70%+ of their total yards for the game against the Eagles came that way. A lot of talk out of Charlotte has been about the Panthers maybe utilizing a little bit more of the hurry-up offense. Greg Olson says that Cam Newton operates a little bit better and more effectively in it in efficiency, but Ron Rivera was pretty quick to dash some of those ideas. I'm surprised as much as anybody, Payne. If you're going against this Baltimore defense, don't you think you want to go out there and play no huddle to try and keep them from substituting?
You're surprised Ron Rivera doesn't want to go no huddle. I read
Riverboat
that quote
Ron, baby. Said, there's no gamble in him, apparently.
How the hell, and we've joked about this, I think, in previous years, but we have new listeners. How in the hell did he get coined the nickname Riverboat Ron?
Pretty sure all it took was him going on like 4th-and-1 when nobody else was doing it from his own side of the field.
And then he goes and like hires Norv Turner, who's somewhat conservative as well. I mean, listen, you know, I don't want to bag on Norv because Carolina's offense has been the strength of this team so far. It's been pretty balanced. When you look at the success rate metrics, they look very good. Fifth in rushing, 12th in passing. Now, there's zero zip. There's zero explosion. Carolina's dead last in the NFL, just 7 explosive passes all season. To Norv's credit, there was a goal at the beginning of the year. It was keep Cam healthy. And so far, he's kept Cam upright through 7 weeks. Newton is the least hit quarterback in the NFL. So I think that's a positive. When you look at how to attack Baltimore's defense, right, there's not many areas to exploit. This is right now the most efficient defense in the NFL. When you look at success rate metrics, top 5 in both rushing and pass defense. The one spot they do struggle with a little bit is the tight end position. Tight ends gave them an issue last year. To this point in the season, they've given up 6 most completions, 9th most yards to tight ends. Maybe Greg Olsen has some success here against a defense that just doesn't have many weaknesses, really.
The one question I want to ask you about, and it's always important when you play against the Carolina Panthers, not only respecting Cam Newton's legs, and this will be the last thing on the game, do you trust the Ravens defensively to be able to neutralize Christian McCaffrey catching balls out of the backfield?
I do. They're actually one of the most elite units in the NFL. Guarding running backs out of the backfield. I believe they've only given up 133 receiving yards all season to running backs. So they do a good job with that, yeah.
Yeah, and if you can do that, that's always going to put you in a good place to have some success as Baltimore look to try and get back in the win column, and we'll see if Carolina comes back to earth a bit. To a game plan,
I'm hoping
that
receiving number is not way off, because I remember seeing that the other day. I believe it's 133 yards they've allowed receiving to
running backs. Incredible. I mean, because that becomes the key. If you take Christian McCaffrey out of the receiving game for Carolina, I mean, it really bogs down. I don't have a ton of respect for what they can do with just Greg Olsen and Devin Funchess. Maybe it puts me in the minority. Maybe we'll see it bear fruit on Sunday. A game pain where I think we're going to see plenty of points, though, Sunday afternoon, and probably the marquee matchup maybe of the entire weekend when we look at the best offense in the league in the Los Angeles Rams matched up against arguably the best quarterback in the league. Number here has drawn a lot of questions. When you look at the Rams, an 8.5-point favorite at betonline.ag, total in this game, 56. This will be the first time, should the number get there, and it's already there in some spots, that Rodgers will be an underdog of 9-plus points. And we look at this Green Bay offense, but going into the bye, I mean, they gained 500 yards of total offense in back-to-back games for the first time since 1983. They're the league's number one total offense since week 5. And Aaron Rodgers, 400-plus passing yards and 0 interceptions in back-to-back games, the first player in league history to do so. But I ask you this, you are the leader and president of the Sean McVay fan club. Is Aaron Rodgers in and of himself enough to keep pace with this Rams offense?
He's certainly going to need to be, I would think. And the number is spot on. 9.5 is what we made it. So while it may be shocking to some and the first time Rodgers has been a dog of that large, it's certainly warranted. I think the positive here, though, for the Packers, first and foremost, we're going to see a healthier Aaron Rodgers. He was a full participant in yesterday's practice, and I'm told the Packers, that was going to be their most extensive practice of the entire week leading up to this game. So I think that's a positive sign there. Let's see if he wears the brace for this one. Claimed he didn't want to. If he doesn't, even better sign. You know, that said, I think the Packers' offensive line deserves some kudos. They've done a fantastic job protecting him. I know the adjusted sack rate metrics don't look great, but because of the knee and Rodgers' lack of mobility when he was pressured, those were turning into sacks, but pressure allowed is always the determinant for sacks. And when you look at that, I think Rodgers only been pressured on 31% of his dropbacks, 30th most in the NFL. So the sack rate, I think, should drop as he gets healthier. I do believe if the Packers wanted to, they could get the ground game going a bit here. On the season, 53% of Green Bay's runs have grade successful. You look at the Rams defense, Sue dealing with a bit of a knee issue here. And if you completely back out the Arizona game, which you should because that isn't an NFL offense, the Rams have allowed 50% of runs to great successful. So something to look for there. Maybe the Packers can have a balance in this game. But again, you know, I'm looking at the Packers. They're the second most heavy pass team in the NFL. They run the ball just 32% of snaps. You would think maybe they're going to protect their defense. Maybe they go a little bit more run heavy here. I would really hope that they continue to keep Scantling and St. Brown in the mix. I just hope they're not thrown to the curb here, because I think they provide a little more energy, a little more spark, a little more oomph to that Packers receiving core in my mind. I think Green Bay should have some success here moving the ball through the air. If you back out games that you should back out, like Arizona's offense, C.J. Beathard, like back those out from the equation, the Rams defense allowed 47% of passes to grade successful. I think we're going to see the Packers have some success here. Now, again, with the CBA in the bye week, offenses tend to actually come out a little bit rustier than usual. So if they can get out of the gates fast, Packers offense is going to have a real shot here.
Well, you mentioned C.J. Beathard, and that same C.J. Beathard actually torched this Green Bay defense the last time we saw the Packers on full display at Monday Night Football, and that's contributed to a Green Bay defense allowing 30-plus points in each of the last two games, allowing 30.5 points per game since Week 5, good enough for 29th in the league. Now, there is a light at the end of the tunnel, though, Payne. From reading the injury reports, it appears that Green Bay may have their entire defensive backfield intact for this matchup, and it's going to be an all-hands-on-deck type affair when you match up against this Rams offense that leads the league in point differential. They're plus 107 in that department. Yard differential, they're plus 825. And they're the first team to score 30-plus points in six of its first seven games since New England in 2015. Does Green Bay have a prayer to try and at least slow down the Rams and maybe force one or two punts?
Well, my guy is back, Jair Alexander, so that is a positive. I would think the concern here for Green Bay is, like, the defense we know has been an absolute sieve the last few weeks. They have really regressed. You would hope the bye week is a helper. You get some of those injured guys back. Jair Alexander is significant. He's had the one guy with speed. So when you look at Cooks, potentially that helps. But when you just look at how Green Bay's trended the last 3 weeks, they've allowed 55% of runs to great successful. Muhammad Wilkerson going out appears to be a factor. It doesn't look like they'll have an ability to kind of choke out that run game with Gurley in the Rams' ground game. The other thing I think that's wildly concerning here is Green Bay comes in 24th in overall defensive efficiency, but they have played the second easiest schedule of opponent offense in the NFL. And so I think it's tough to see that translate here. If you're giving up 30 at home against C.J. Beathard, what's it going to look like when you go on the road against McVay and company? Like, I get you were banged up on defense. I get your secondary was banged up. You get your best guy back. But, I just don't see it translating here. I mean, if Green Bay is going to have to – if they're going to have success here or they're going to be able to stalemate just a little bit, you're going to have to figure out how to get pressure on Goff. I think that's the one element that the Packers defense has been pretty good at, 5th in adjusted sack rate, 10th in pass rush. But you are going up against one of the very best offensive lines in the NFL. So I think that's going to be interesting here. I would envision a little more aggressive approach from Green Bay. Cooper Kupp looks like he's out. So maybe if you're a defense, you're going to be saying, hey, I'm going to be more willing here to maybe create a short field, turn McVay's offense over. Either way, I think you need to be more aggressive, because if you give up a quick score or if you turn the Rams over, both of those result in positive things, and that's getting Aaron Rodgers the ball back.
Well, and I'm going to ask you a question that's going to make me sound like a dumbass, but that's never really been something
Mr.
I'm afraid
Dumas.
Of.
I've How never are you been doing today, sir?
Afraid of in the past. When you look at the NFL right now in 2018, and you're trying to go up against some of the high-powered offense, whether it's the Rams in the NFC or the Chiefs in the AFC, and you're looking for the elements you need to beat them, is it better to have a defense capable of getting stops, or is it more important to have an offense that can keep pace with these teams?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think you need an offense that can keep pace. I really do. Now, it would be nice if you can turn your opponent over, and that's why I think that's the goal here for the Packers. Go balls to the wall. Create a sack. Maybe get them in an unfavorable down and distance once so you can get them off the field. Be aggressive. Create a turnover. I think that's your best bet. I really do. And I just, when you look at the Rams and how you're going to stop that offense, it's tough, because when you're an opponent and you're game planning and scheming for the Rams offense, it's different every week because the Rams are smart, right? The Rams don't – there's a lot of offenses that do what they do. And I get that. If you do it well, continue to do it. But McVay – schemes and game plans for opponent weaknesses, and a lot of coaches and teams don't do that, so it looks different every week because their opponent's different every week. And when you look this year, Goff has been fantastic. He's taken that next step. so he no longer is an issue. I don't know. It's tough to stop Gurley. And right now, Goff's just hanging out in the pocket. The offensive line's been fantastic. He's only been pressured on 26% of his dropbacks. 39 quarterbacks have been pressured more, to put that in perspective. So Goff's having all day. He's made the improvement. It's tough to stop them right now.
Yeah, it's much easier to be a starting quarterback in the National Football League if you're not under pressure than if you have 300-pound men bearing down on you every time you take a snap and you're running for your life. So there's no doubt about it, this Rams offense should be fun to watch in a game that I think everyone should make appointment viewing Sunday afternoon between these two proud teams. And we'll see if Green Bay can get themselves back into the discussion of being a contender in the NFC, because their upcoming schedule really does them no favors. They may need to pull off an upset or two to stay in wild card contention. To the Sunday night affair, Payne, it is a rematch of the Minneapolis Miracle that we saw during the postseason last year. Stephon Diggs dancing down the sidelines, much to the chagrin of Saints fans. Since 2010, three teams have lost a playoff game on a walk-off touchdown to their opponent and then faced the same team the following regular season. Those teams 1-2 in the rematch. I give you that to give you this. New Orleans, we'll call them a one-point underdog at betonline.ag, total in this game 52. But the number didn't open up at one. It opened a little bit higher in the Vikings' favor, and we've seen some Saints money pour in since that number was posted Sunday night at BetOnline.
Yeah, we did a little bit. 2.5 didn't last. Couple guys were able to buy to 3. Now, could see Minnesota take a little money. It looks like overnight the favorites changed. Doesn't take a ton of money to go across the zero there, but looks like New Orleans. I went to bed, they're a 1-point favorite. Now they're a 1-point dog. So a little money looks like coming in on Minnesota. You know, you mentioned the Minnesota Miracle. If you talk to Sean Payton or Drew Brees this week, it's not a revenge game. In fact, they've said it so frequently, it's tough to actually believe. but, you know, like once the game kicks off, I think all that stuff goes out the window. It's the prep leading up to the game where I think that added motivation helps, right? You know, your practice is going to be more crisp. You're more attention to detail all week, a few extra hours in film, making sure you get enough sleep. Maybe this isn't a week where you're going to go out on the town, right, when you see these big games scheduled. This is certainly a tough environment to play in. And the Saints did face a very physical team in Baltimore last week, and this is the fourth road trip in 5 games for New Orleans. But I think that bye week, you know, sprinkled in, certainly helps negate some of those factors, at least the last two that I mentioned for the most part.
When you look at this new Minnesota defense right now, clearly they've figured some things out over the last couple weeks, but they appear to be an absolute mash unit. And, I mean, we talked about it on Monday with Dr. Chow. Xavier Rhodes, we weren't sure of his availability. Andrews and Dejo missed the game. Linval Joseph missed last week, should probably be back this week. Everson Griffin returns to the team. The list goes on and on. I mean, next man up mentality is one thing in the league, but this has to be awfully scary if you're the Vikings trying to devise a defensive game plan against Drew Brees right now, who's completing 77% of his passes, 13 touchdowns, no interceptions, and has the most passing touchdowns of any player without an interception through six games of a season in the Super Bowl era. Do the Vikings have enough on the defensive side?
That guy, Brees, is good.
He's a pretty good quarterback. Huh? He may have a future in this business.
That Brees is good. You know, we're going to find out, I think, a lot about both defenses, but certainly Minnesota's. And there's a reason Zimmer is pressing Xavier Rhodes to return, and suddenly Everson Griffin is progressing so nicely. Seems somewhat convenient. You know, I kind of remember being in high school. I was out of commission when a girlfriend dumps you for 3 weeks. Suddenly Everson Griffin, he's fixed 30 years of mental issues in 3 weeks. So there's a reason some of these guys are back. Let's see if he plays.
I've tried to fix 35 years of mental issues in 200 Bet the Board or 202 Bet the Board podcasts, and I still have a long way to go.
Yeah, I mean, let's see if those guys play. I don't know. I think these are certainly the kind of things that happen when Drew Brees and that Saints offense comes to town. I have to tell you, I was very surprised with how well New Orleans played last week off the bye, where offenses, again, tend to show some rust outside the dome, on grass. There were steady winds, 17 miles per hour, 30 mile per hour wind gusts. Saints offense goes into Baltimore, hangs 24 against the best defense in the NFL. And I know we joked on Monday, maybe it's more if Taysom Hill isn't taking critical 4th-and-2 snaps from inside the Ravens 10 and pitches it backwards. You know, for me, the one thing that just stood out in this game is the ability for the Saints to move the ball through the air. This is not your traditional Mike Zimmer defense. They finished second in efficiency last year, eighth the year before. Right now, this Vikings defense, I think, is well below average. You know, they're allowing 7.5 yards per pass attempt. That's sixth worst in the NFL. And I think why that makes me a little nervous if I was looking at the Vikings is they haven't played anybody. It's been the easiest schedule of opposing offenses, the easiest schedule of passing offenses when you incorporate success rate. And so, you know, Drew Brees and that offense comes in. And no matter how optimistic Zimmer sounds, Xavier Rhodes being a Florida State guy, I ain't gonna tell there. I can tell you he has had a serious limp just walking around yesterday. And he plays a position where, you know, you have these harsh, exaggerated cuts. This isn't an own lineman playing in a phone booth. This is a corner playing on an island, covering large spaces. If he's asked to move around and cut on a dime, I'm not sure he can. Rhodes, if he does play, is going to be nowhere close to 100%. If you remember last year, he got absolutely bullied by Michael Thomas. So, you know, I don't know what we're going to see there from him. You have a Vikings defense 21st in rushing success rate. I could see the Saints having an efficient ground game here too. That's one thing we talked about. Getting Mark Ingram back. Another layer to this offense. Just keep adding it on. He came back in great shape. So, I can't see how Minnesota's defense has a shot here.
When you look at the other side of the ball real quick and the Saints defense matched up against the Vikings offense, we know that Kirk Cousins has developed quite the rapport early on with Adam Thielen, putting up record numbers there. But the Vikings have become a very one-dimensional offense, and can't imagine that'll change with Dalvin Cook probably not coming back until week 11 for some of the recent updates I read. We know the Saints are extremely stout against the run. Can the Vikings do enough if they're one-dimensional against this Saints defense?
Well, you nailed it, right? They're a pass-first offense, thrown about 68% of the time. That's third most in the NFL. So it looks like even though Zimmer's a defensive guy, he's changed with the times. Now, the last 2 weeks, that offense has gotten some help on the ground from Latavius Murray. I would doubt that continues. As you pointed out, the Saints defense has been fantastic against the run. They've allowed just 3.1 yards per rush attempt. That's first in the NFL. For me, this game, it comes down to Kirk Cousins, Thielen, and Diggs. That's it. Those three. It's that simple. And honestly, New Orleans hasn't been good stopping the pass. They've allowed 53% of passes to grade successful, second worst in the NFL. They have faced the eighth toughest schedule of passing offenses. So maybe, you know, we see some progression there. I do like going out and adding Eli Apple to the secondary. I think fit is everything, and people probably call me crazy, but I just think the Saints took a flyer in Eli Apple. I think a change in environment is a positive thing. There are guys in that New Orleans locker room that have clout, so he's not going to act up. And from what I've read and heard, Eli Apple is happy as hell. So it sounds like you have the off-field stuff there. That won't be an issue. And in my mind, the bigger thing here that a lot of people you won't hear talk about is on-field. He is right back with his Ohio State teammates in this secondary. Marshawn Lattimore and Von Bell, they're best of friends. Those two guys vouched for him when Sean Payton went and said, hey, do we need to go get this guy? And they said, yes, absolutely. So I think that trio, I think that helps significantly here, even right away. I think that is a big get for the Saints defense.
There's no doubt this should be the crown jewel on a pretty good NFL Sunday slate. We do have one more game to get to, and it's anything but a crown jewel for tonight's game between the Houston Texans and the Miami Dolphins. And before we do that, though, Payne, let's talk to the man behind the counter. He joins us every Thursday here on the Bet the Board podcast. And Dave, I know people can follow you on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. There was actually a small pool that was growing if you were going to be able to show up for the podcast, given how we think the last weekend in the NFL unfolded for you guys.
Yeah, my boss forced me into it, so I had to show up. I was going to call in sick today, but I had to show up. Yeah, we got killed. It was a bloodbath. Sunday was bad. I think it was the second worst day in the history of Bet Online second best day for players in Bet Online history. So yeah, we got killed. I mean, the day started out great with the Titans. That was lovely. I thought, oh wow, we got that early game where it's gonna be a great day, and then it all went to hell from there. Patriots was bad. Broncos, Chiefs at night was just, we were under assault from all different angles there. The money line, the spread, the total, that was just horrible. House, like I said, Titans was good, Texans was okay, nothing to write home about. And then Giants Monday night, they saved our ass. They really that back door, thank God for it. I didn't even know it hit, man. I turned it off. Next morning, I got a message that about the back door. I was like, holy hell, man. I was kind of, I went to bed early. I was like, I can't watch this. So we lucked out there with the Giants.
Dave, one question on the Monday night game, because it's always different here in the desert than it can be in the offshore world. When you look at a Monday night game, we always used to say you were never going to make a lot to Monday night football, but you had to do damage control from the weekend. Is it the same way for you guys that it was all the parlay liability and everything else? Or do you guys just see a ton of people still coming in straight bets that can turn a weekend from a mediocre one to a very profitable or some semblance of damage control as well?
Both, really. I mean, you know, especially after a weekend like this past weekend, I mean, everybody's loaded Monday morning. I mean, everybody, they killed us Sunday, so everybody's freaking rich. So they got all this money, so everybody's looking to double down at night. But yeah, there's so many parlays and teasers keyed into the Monday night game like there are the Sunday night game. And so it's both. Yeah, I mean, but a big part of it, this past Monday night game was this, everybody was loaded. You know, not a lot of people were reloading Monday morning. There weren't a lot of bonus specials getting taken advantage of Monday morning. It was just everybody was loaded and firing away on that Monday night game. And the bettors were on the right side, but the wrong side covered. So we'll take it.
New week, new beginnings, Dave.
That's the good thing. Like I've always said, like I work in marketing, so I'm always looking at active numbers. When you get killed during the week in the previous weekend, our active numbers go up and that kind of stuff. So that's the, you know, the action is going to be through the roof this weekend too, since everybody's loaded.
So that's a positive. When we look at this week, how's it shaping up? Is the Thursday night game providing any liability? There's some decent matchups. You have the Sunday night New Orleans-Minnesota contest. What does it look like so far in terms of public liability and then some sharp action that's hit the shop early this week?
Yeah, Thursday night game, tonight's game, it's kind of 50-50. So maybe we can just sit there, relax, and hopefully just scoop the juice. Besides that, you know, Sunday, there's some huge liability. The early game from England, 81% of the action is on the Eagles. 79% is on the Bears. 86% is on the Skins. 71% on the Bengals. Colts with 83% at the Raiders. Packers, 78% getting all those points against the Rams. And, oh boy, the Patriots at the Bills. 82% of the money, or the bets so far, are on the Patriots. So that's going to be a huge game. Sharp, not a lot as of yet. Texans over 44, that's currently 45. Bears minus 7, that's up to minus 7.5. Raiders under 50.5, that's 49. KC under 55-54, that is currently 53.5. That's it for Sharp right now, but plenty more to come in.
All right, Dave, I hate to ask this question because you said everybody's accounts are going to be flush and no one's going to need to look to reload, but there may be some folks out there looking to add another shop to their arsenal. What kind of promotions are available for our Bet the Board listeners this weekend at betonline.ag?
Yes, sir. If you do not have a betonline.ag account, sign up for one. Use promo code 75BTB on your first ever deposit to get a 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account, have not taken advantage of the Bet the Board reload bonus yet, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% reload bonus. Max bonus is $1,000 for each. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
Dave, it's never good hearing you guys lose, but I think a lot of our listeners will feel a Patriots rant was long overdue, and it took till NFL Week 7 for the Pats to really be a thorn in the house's side. Happy hunting this weekend, my friend. I'm sure a lot of folks will hit you up at Dave Mason, BOL, on Twitter. Always great to get your take on Saturday's action and see exactly who you guys are rooting for come Sunday afternoon.
Sounds good. Have a great weekend, guys.
I mean, they were able to hold off the Chargers all season long, Payne. And I guess if you're a sports book and you don't have your first bloodbath weekend to Week 7, it's a pretty good thing in the overall big picture.
Oh, you've been behind the counter, so you know. And I think we talked about this a few weeks back with Mason. They're going to win most weeks. The players are going to have 1, 2, maybe 3 weeks a season where it's just an absolute bludgeoning of the sports books. And it's not necessarily just the sides. It's how they come in. It's it's the popular teams when you can tease them down and they're hitting the money line parlays. When that all adds up, it turns into a bad weekend for the books.
Oh, if I was still behind the counter, I would have been pacing back and forth, and I might not have watched the Giants' back door, because every money line parlay, every teaser, every 4 and 5 teamer with favorites, especially knowing that the primetime games, the way they unfolded from Denver Thursday night to Kansas City on Sunday night into the Falcons, would have all clicked in. So that's why I kind of wanted to ask Dave, hey, do you guys have the same approach that books out here in Vegas do, where it's more damage control on Monday than it can be profitable? But I know the offshore market a little bit different. So always interesting to hear how things unfold there. You know, you and I typically put ourselves on the side of the house, so we have good weekends in conjunction when the books do well. I'm sure there's some of our listeners, though, that profited quite handsomely from the weekend that was. And last but not least, before we get out of town, we do have a game tonight with your beloved Dolphins on the road against the Houston Texans. This number hovering between 7 and 7.5 at betonline.ag. Total has moved from 40 to 45, sitting in that range, 44.5 some locations. And I joke with you, Payne, but I was kind of half serious. I said, I'm not going to do a whole lot of prep for this game because it's your team. You know them better than anybody else. But I have to ask, when you look at Brock Osweiler against the Houston Texans, is that the biggest storyline that we're going to see on display tonight?
It's quite possible. Maybe if Gase is going to play Devontae Parker, that seemed to get some nice news at the middle of the week with Devontae Parker's agent calling.
Yeah, he had some pretty strong words at Devontae's agent. I felt like I was watching an episode of Ballers around there.
It's a tough situation, because Gase really loved Devontae Parker. In fact, last year put his arm right around him and said, hey, this is the things we need to do to be a professional. These are the kind of things you need to put the right things in your body. You need to work out. I mean, he really was all in with Devontae Parker. And so to see him constantly be injured, to see him constantly make the wrong moves off the field, Gase had enough. And that's basically what's transpired there. When we talk about Brock Osweiler, this is certainly a tough matchup. Short week. It's the first game on the road for him this season. You have a Texans defense that's number one in rushing success rate, so they could very well say, hey, Brock, come and beat us. And the Texans staff knows Brock's strengths. They know his weaknesses. Now he's without Stills and Wilson, so it could certainly be a tough task there. I do think Devontae Parker gets in the mix here, obviously, but he doesn't have quite the rapport with Brock Osweiler. They just haven't done enough together. They called Laurante Carew up off the practice squad. What I am hearing is, and you see Gase, he says during his press conference, they said, hey, what are you going to do at the receiver position? He said, well, I got 5 running backs. I would think we're going to see Kenyon Drake line up quite a bit at receiver this evening, potentially in the slot, potentially catching some passes. So certainly a tough spot for the Miami Dolphins. You'll wonder if some of the fatigue is going to set in. This is a thin roster. They're absolutely decimated with injuries. It's a shock that they have a winning record. If they can somehow win this game, I mean, just kudos to Adam Gase, because they are just decimated all over. And we've talked about them using that home field heat to their advantage. Now all of a sudden you've played back-to-back games in that heat. You have a thin unit, especially in the defensive line, especially in the middle of that defensive line. This could be a real tough spot here.
When I look at the Texans, their ability to move the ball offensively obviously starts and stops with Deshaun Watson. We've seen the recipe to try and slow him down is containing the edge, keeping him in the pocket. Cameron Wake and company, you think they'll be able to get enough pressure on Watson here, force him out of his comfort zone, or do you worry a little bit about the Dolphins' back end, knowing that Watson more than willing to try and test the defense over the top with a couple of the weapons that he has, DeAndre Hopkins and, of course, Will Fuller?
So it doesn't really matter who guards Hopkins. He's gone nuts every game. He's just that good. But I'm told Xavien Howard will shoulder that responsibility and mirror Hopkins. Now, Xavien Howard's going to have about 100 people here, friends and family. He went to Baylor. He's a Houston boy. So he is going to take this challenge. Let's see if it works. We know the Texans' offensive line is a little bit of a mess, but you look at the Dolphins right now, they're not getting after the quarterback. 28th in adjusted sacks, 29th in hit rate. The one thing that we have seen, and if you've been tracking this, partially why this total is trending under is, one, we talked about the familiarity with Brock in the Texans' defense and the inability to run the ball against that Texans defense. But the other side of this is the Texans offense. I am being told they're just trying to limp into the bye week here because you have Deshaun Watson with the partially collapsed lung and a broken rib. they are desperately trying to get to the bye week. So they have been real run heavy more than they have the last few weeks. We know against Jacksonville, they didn't want Watson boarding the team plane because of those internal issues. They had him ride down and back 12 hours each way in a bus. He actually didn't get back to Houston until Tuesday morning. So short week of prep for him, I would think. The other interesting element here is Lamar Miller going against his hometown team that didn't think he was worth the money. And while he hasn't been, that's certainly not his specific mindset for this game. So that will be interesting to monitor, especially with the Dolphins run defense that's trending negatively the last few weeks. They're beat up. They're thin on that defensive line. So certainly a matchup that there's going to be some matchup advantages here. I'm probably not going to be on this game. I can certainly see why under money is coming in. I certainly don't want to lay it with the Texans, but it is one of the sharper teaser legs of the week, and it's being paired quite frequently from a teaser group to the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Not entirely surprising. We know what the Steelers will have at stake this weekend against the Cleveland Browns, a game we didn't cover in detail here, but some fascinating angles worth considering as you start to build out your football cards for the NFL weekend, beginning as early as tonight with the Texans taking on the Dolphins. And Payne, before we close up shop on another lovely installment of the Bet the Board podcast, we have to figure out where we're going and how we're making it happen this weekend with a best investment.
Yeah, I think let's go to the Baltimore Ravens. Well, if you like that, let's go with the Ravens on the money line. It's about $1.25 right now. You can find, I prefer that rather than one minus 20 or even 2.5. We made this game 3. So again, I know we mentioned this on the college podcast yesterday. When you're looking at 1, 1.5 to invest, to overcome the VIG, you really need to have made this game 3. That's exactly what we did. We made actually 3 minus 15 on Baltimore. So let's go with the Ravens on the money line here, minus $1.25.
Perfect. Another wonderful show in the books. But I do have some bad news, Payne, for our loyal listeners.
It's not bad news.
Well, not good news for us, bad news for them. I mean, we've elected, much like NFL teams that are banged up at about this time of the season, to give ourselves a bye week. But it's not a full bye week. It's only a half bye since we're playing on Thursday. We're coming back next Thursday. So no show on Monday. I know a lot of you would be sitting on the edge of your seat waiting for us to break down all the intriguing matchups in a Derek Anderson-led Buffalo Bills team against the New England Patriots. But we felt this provided a logical breaking point. So take that Monday morning, spend quality time with your family. You don't have to bet it, or if you do bet it, you just won't have the insight from the Bet the Board crew. So we got it approved by our Board of Regents. We went to the executive team here at the Bet the Board brass, all our business partners, and they said, yep, you guys get the Monday off. So that's what we're going to do, and we'll be back better than ever on Thursday for all things NFL Week 9, I think.
Yeah, Wednesday as well for college football. So
it's a good point.
Yes, we'll be back Wednesday and Thursday. The only day we're taking off is the Monday bye, just simply because it's Derek Anderson. It's a 14-point spread. Could be one of the least viewed Monday Night Football games of the entire season. So we thought it was a good spot.
Yeah, and if the NFL is going to take the week off with the game that they've given us on the schedule, we're going to do the exact same thing on Monday. So we'll be back with you Wednesday, College Football Show with Dusty Dvoracek, as we are every Wednesday through the fall, Thursday with Dave Mason to break down all things National Football League. Payne, any final parting shots before we close up shop? And shit, we get, you know, almost 5 full days without one another.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. Are you going to make it is the question.
I might go through some withdrawals. I mean, there'll be text messages, obviously, but I might go through some withdrawals not hearing your voice on the podcast.
I'm going to claim it's not the time difference, but I wake up every morning to Todd text messages. It makes me feel warm and fuzzy.
I'm not sure most of America would feel that same way, whether it's listening on radio, or turning into this fine podcast, or text messages. But all right, enough pleasant banter for today. Special thanks to Dave Mason, as always. You can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. You can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. You can follow me there at Todd Firm. But most importantly, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. No show on Monday. We'll be back with you next Wednesday for college football and Thursday for the NFL. Best of luck with all your investments this weekend. And come Sunday afternoon, just in time to flip over to Green Bay and the Rams. We'll see you at the window, cashing a Ravens ticket. We'll be right back.